Ladies and gentlemen, welcome you all to Drive to HR, where we talk to HR professionals, industry experts, and you know the movers and shakers in the HR industry. So there is no difference for today's show, but there is one specialty, the person who knows what's happening, what's current in the HR tech industry, and we're going to talk to him. And this is your host, Nisha and William, joining with George Berzin. George, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
Well, we are honored to have you here with us today, George. And personally, I'm really, really excited and happy to talk to you. This is for the first time that I'm interacting with you. So it's a pleasure.
Oh, it's my pleasure, too. I get a chance to learn so many things and meet so many people in HR. If I can share what I'm picking up, I'm thrilled to just, you know, spread the gospel as much as I possibly can. So,
well, can't wait to hear your what you got to say and the wisdoms from you. So, Josh, if you don't mind, would you please introduce yourself so that our audience can learn more about who you are and what you do?
Sure. My name is Josh Berzin. And I, about 15 years ago, inadvertently tripped into this marketplace when I was laid off at another company, to tell you the truth. That's a whole story in itself. And I've been studying, researching, and working as an analyst in HR for about 14 or 15 years, including building a company called Berzin by Deloitte, now called Berzin by Deloitte. It was originally called Berzin and Associates. So we have about 80 people or so that are constantly studying trends and technologies and vendors and benchmarks and all sorts of interesting things going on. And, of course, during that period of time, I was fortunate enough that we went through two recessions and have had a dramatic change in the investment and technologies associated with HR and training and learning and recruiting. So I find myself never bored with things to look at and people to talk to and areas to study.
So, because of the vista that you, because of the space that you're at, Josh, you get to interact with a lot of Deloitte clients as well as a lot of the your Berzin clients from before. What would you say is keeping them up at night these days? What's top of mind for them these days?
Well, I would say there's a bunch of things, and we produce this big report called Human Capital Trends that goes through them. I would say the biggest thing is, I think most HR organizations feel like they're not keeping up. They see businesses are improving, globalization, millennials, issues with employee engagement, dramatic gaps in the leadership pipeline, new technologies in recruiting, social networking, you name it, transparency, crowdsourcing, all that stuff that we, you know, live with every day, it all impacts HR. And HR professionals are a very small group in most companies. It's not a big organization compared to, you know, all the managers in the company. And so they have to not only keep up with sort of the changes around them, but they have to figure out how to do things that are strategic to their company. And one of the things I think we have to remind ourselves in HR is, even though, you know, we may consider our job is to keep the company out of trouble and keep people happy, that's really kind of just the bare minimum. What we really need to do is figure out how to reinforce the things that make our company unique and our competitive advantages and the few things that drive our differentiation between other companies. And that should be part of HR's job, too. So it's a very exciting time, and I think more people from business school are moving into HR every day. I hear that all the time. People with data science and analytics backgrounds are starting to move into HR. But in general, it's hard to keep up. So very, very dynamic time.
Do you notice that for whatever reason, HR practitioners don't talk to other HR practitioners?
You know, it's funny, William. I think if you're in HR at a semi-senior level, even if you're at a junior level, the more time you can spend talking to people in HR outside of your company, the better. Now, that's hard to do. It takes time. You have to get on a plane. You might have to go to a conference. You might have to go to a trade show. But you will always learn something from somebody else. And the reason for that is I like to think of HR as a craft, not a profession. A profession like accounting, you can go to school, you can pass a test, and you can work as an accountant day one. It's very clear what your job is, and there's right and wrong all over the place. In HR, as much as there's a lot of education and training required, every problem really requires sort of a subtle solution around it. You can't just copy things out of a book and apply them in every single company. So the only way you get good at that craft, just like you know, woodworkers or cabinet makers, is by practice and working and learning through apprentice from others. And so I think, you know, HR people have to take the time to get out and meet with each other. And every single time we have a meeting like that, and I have to force myself to get out too, people walk away with some things they're like, oh my God, you know, I never realized I could do it that way, or what a great idea. So I think it's a really important part of this particular profession.
Speaking of class, I saw an announcement the other day that you're going to be doing a class, and if I got this right, you're doing it for free. So first of all, what's the class all about, and why are you taking it on, and just give the audience a little bit of the details around your class.
Sure. So what we did is, everybody knows what a MOOC is. We, you know, I was in the training and education business before I get into HR, so I've seen this MOOC thing before. I actually saw the similar evolution in the late 1990s when this all started. And so now we have all these, you know, really, really interesting platforms out there with educational content from universities and more subject matter experts. And here I am, we're sitting on 50 or 60,000 pages of research, God knows how many hours of webinars, oodles and oodles of data. And so I convinced our organization, and it took a little while to convince Deloitte that this was worth doing, to let me put together a relatively simple MOOC on HR. So there's a course, no charge course. It's mostly a talking head, so there aren't a lot of assessments or exams, but you know, we can do that later, in the Udemy environment called, I think it's called the New HR. And what it primarily is an overview of many of the topics that we've been talking about all year, and kind of a high-level introduction to them for just about anybody at any part of the HR function. And I would say it's an experiment. We are not sure what the right media and organizational structure should be for this kind of stuff, and I want to do a lot more education as I, you know, sort of evolve in my own personal career. So this is something that's completely free. I just looked at somebody's feedback today who told me it was boring, so I asked him to tell me what I could do to make it more interesting. Hopefully it's not boring, because about 1,000 people have already signed up, and one person said it was boring, but hopefully the rest of them didn't. But it's out there, and I'm open to any and all feedback on what we can do to make it better.
Great. Well, George, we have this notion. I mean, this is there since the inception of HR, I guess. Like mm-hmm. people say, we hate HR, right? And it's there all over the web. And you yourself have written an interesting article on redesigning HR on that aspect.
Yeah.
Well, I also noticed that a long time ago, I think a month ago or so, I'm not sure, Wall Street Journal, they published an article saying companies are saying no to having an HR department.
Yeah.
So what do you force? Yeah. So what do you foresee happening in the HR industry when it comes to, do we really need to take a step back and think about redesigning HR?
Yeah, this is, you know, the article that I wrote in Forbes and I put it on LinkedIn, you know, essentially talks about mm-hmm. the fact that people have been complaining about HR from long before I got involved.
Like
they were probably complaining about IT, you know, as well. And the reason is that what HR does in many cases seems optional or something that you think you could do yourself. So many of the things that HR is supposed to be good at, recruiting, management, compensation, benefits, et cetera, No, the average Joe might say, yeah, I could figure that out on my own. So what that Wall Street Journal article was about was basically saying, we're not going to bother having any professionals do this. We're going to have all the managers do it. Now, of course, the problem with that is most managers move into management usually accidentally. They're promoted, and they don't have the time to learn all the things that HR professionals know. So they're learning on the job, and they're making a lot of mistakes in the process. So one of the most important things HR people do is they prevent managers from making what you might consider to be sort of stupid mistakes, hiring the wrong person, saying the wrong thing, making something unequal and unfair by accident, perhaps giving somebody the wrong kind of feedback. So that, you know, that, and but a lot of people say, you know, I don't need that. I can figure that out for myself. The reason that it's a more urgent issue now is that we believe, through a lot of the research we've done, that the typical model, the organizational model of HR, which is often called the Ulrich model, pioneered by Dave Ulrich, which is a shared services model, is broken and needs to be fixed. And so this idea of the HR department being a shared service is obsolete. It's not a shared service. It's a consulting function. And it does have shared services in it, but if it isn't consulting with business leaders and pushing back and doing innovative things and leveraging data and technology in innovative ways, and if all we're doing is trying to reduce its cost down to the bare possible minimum, then, you know, people are probably going to say, well, let's just outsource it and forget about it. And every company that I've ever talked to that's outsourced HR has come back 3 or 4 years later and said, gee, we're kind of sorry we did that because we lost all the competitive advantage we had in the HR function. So I think it's a particularly interesting conversation to have right now because we're going through this change. But I have a feeling 10 years from now or 20 years from now when I'm retired, somebody's going to write another article on why we have to blow up the HR department.
So relate that to all the things that you've seen in technology, Josh. You've seen a massive amount of technology adoption and consumption. And a lot of things are tried. Some things work, some things fail, and we're coming up on HR tech. So now let's pivot the conversation to HR and technology. What's that relationship now? What do you see that's there that's kind of working, and maybe even some of the things that aren't quite working?
Sure. Well, you know, that happens to be a really interesting part of my life because I spent about 15 or 20 years in technology before I get into this. We are going to be releasing a research report called The 10 Disruptions of HR Technology at the conference. I don't know which one, but at the first one. And so I'll just preview a little bit of that. The biggest thing, the one thing that is the biggest thing that's happened in my time as an analyst in about 15 years or so, is the shift in HR technology from being a system of transactional record to being what is often called a system of engagement. All the HR tools that we buy originally had roots as back office administrative systems used by the HR department, not the employees, to administer some arcane process that somebody dreamed up, which was probably too complicated, and get all the data in there and make sure that people did it. And that's everything from expense accounts to learning management to recruiting, applicant tracking, performance management, all of that. Those were all automation systems. Well, that is completely the wrong model now. Now all these tools are becoming consumer applications for employees and managers, not for HR. Now HR gets to use them too, and HR has to use them, but if they're not used by employees for their daily life as at work, not just for their HR stuff, then they're probably not adding that much value and they're not probably paying for themselves. And that's a huge change in the way these tools are being designed, the way they're being rolled out on different platforms and what they actually do. So, you know, a couple of examples, you know, simple examples. So in the learning market, there used to be this thing called a learning management system, and it was basically an online course catalog. And it was like a course catalog in college. You go in, you register, you sign up, you pay, and then it gives you an email that says, show up at this time for this class and, you know, buy this book. And that was it. That was completely administrative. Nobody really did it, you know. They did it because they had to do it. Now, you know, that's not nearly enough. I mean, yes, you have to do that, but that's kind of a trivial part of what learning is today. The more important part of learning is, where's the content? Who do I talk to? What information is available? What courses do we have outside the company that I should be taking? What are my competencies for this job, and what should they be next? Can I take a little training on my phone while I'm standing in line at Starbucks? You know, on and on and on. So it's completely changed. And I think if you go through every single HR application, they've all done that. I mean, we could talk through every single one, and they've all turned into employee-facing apps. And that's why there's so much disruption, because the vendors that figure out how to redesign these things for, you know, people, not just HR professionals, are, you know, killing the ones that aren't, and they're, you know, disrupting the others. So that's one of the 10 disruptions. But I think it's maybe the biggest sort of Uber thing that's happened. I guess we can't say Uber anymore, because that's a company.
No, we can't. No, that sets off a chain of reaction that none of us are comfortable with.
Yeah.
So what? I'm always curious about how does HR and recruiters and trainers and, you know, compensation experts, how do they keep track of it all? How do they, I mean, at last, I guess, there was 20,000 different solutions worldwide that kind of touch our space. How do people, keep track of them?
That's essentially the business that you're in and I'm in to some degree, is to help people make sense of it. It's very confusing. I think big companies have to have a research person or a research department that keeps up and goes to trade shows and tries to keep up on vendors. You know, most big companies have some of that sensing going on, but not enough. They learn from their peers. That's why there's a bit of a crowd mentality in HR. There's, if you grouped, you know, all of the companies in the world into categories, there are early adopters. You know, there are companies that love to try new things, and they will go out there and they'll go to a trade show and they'll find a new tool and they'll buy something from a small company and they'll just check it out because they want to innovate. There are companies that are fast followers, so, you know, they'll wait for, you know, most of the other big companies around them to adopt that tool and then they'll buy it. You know, and that's what's going on in some of these tools, like, you know, companies like Workday and some of the more really hot ERP companies. They started with early adopters. Now they're getting, you know, sort of the next level. And then there are laggards. There are companies that really don't care about the technology at all, and they will put in the cheapest, you know, most commodity-like thing they can find, and they actually usually do fine. You know, the funny thing is, mm-hmm. most companies, the technology itself isn't as dramatic as the way you use it. So the companies in the laggard category can still be great organizations doing great things. They just don't rely on the technology as much, you know, for their particular workforce. And, you know, if you have a young workforce, if you work at a place like Deloitte, where I am, I mean, if you don't give people cool stuff, you know it and they care. So you kind of have this issue of your audience, too, and what your employees expect.
So with HR tech coming up, what are some of the favorite things? What do you love to do? What do you love about HR tech, the conference?
Yeah.
So what are some of the things that you wish that you never had to do again?
Well, the conference, you know, as you know, William, it's just a fascinating conference because everybody you've ever met in the technology industry is there. You know, Steve is, I'm sure, going to be a really cool sort of next generation Bill in some way. Bill was always, you know, a wonderful part of it and his style. There's 1,000 new products being launched. I don't know what they all are. I know a few of them. So it's a lot of chance to really see some brand new things. There's awards for innovative technology. So you can go, I don't remember what it's called, but you can go to the session on the top 10, you know, hot new technologies, and you can see what the new stuff is. There are a lot of senior practitioners there. It's also interesting because that particular conference brings out senior executives, because the senior execs can go to one place and get an update on technology very quickly, as opposed to going to, you know, dozens and dozens of other conferences. But also, I just like it because everybody I know is there. I mean, I've been doing this long enough, and I think most of us that are in the industry, you know, you can wander around and bump into somebody you know in about 60 seconds, and that's always nice. The other thing that's kind of interesting, I don't know if most people know this, but a lot of deals get done at that conference. I've had very big business development relationships and alliances and things that we've done over the years that have all been done there. because all the right people are in the same room. So, you know, if you're an HR buyer and you're trying to meet the CEO of your vendor or, you know, have a talk with them about something that's really important to you, you might be able to track them down there and have a coffee with them or have a drink or go out to dinner with them. So it's a very good place to connect with, you know, the vendor community.
Well, Josh, throughout this experience, what is the most fascinating disrupt idea that you've ever seen?
Well, you know, I get fascinated by just about everything. You know, I'm kind of that way. The thing that's really interesting to me right now is, and this is not big data. Big data is cool, but big data is, I kind of get that. I think there is an emerging trend towards culture and psychology merging with data in HR. And here, let me explain what I mean by that in a minute, you know, sort of just a second. So we all, most HR departments know they want to do more analytics. So they're going to take all this data they have about people, and it's generally going to be data like when were they hired, how old are they, where did they go to school, what jobs have they had in the past, and, you know, characteristic data about them. And then they will try to figure out based on that data, you know, who are the best salespeople and what do we have to do to make more of them, who's the right people to be promoted, why we have such high turnover, and so forth. But there's also this other type of data that's really interesting, that's the IO psychology data, the personality data, the assessments you took, the subtle characteristics of the way you work. And many, many companies have been trying to figure out what to do with that data for many years, all the way back to Carl Jung. You know, when I give my speech on analytics, if I have enough time, I always go back to the history of analytics. But HR analytics started in the 1800s with Freud. I mean, a lot of Freud and Carl Jung's original understanding about why people are happy and not happy applied to work. And so this idea of engagement and what causes it and how come some people are happy and productive and some people aren't and some people can be promoted and succeed and some people can be promoted and fail. All that information is kind of sitting around in these assessment databases, but nobody's really using it. So I've been sort of finding a lot of smart people, and partly because of the cloud, I think, that are trying to figure out how to tap into this. And I think we're entering an era of new tools, data-driven tools, for engagement, culture, work-life balance. There's a bunch of happiness tools, believe it or not. I talked to a vendor the other day that has a tool that will automatically gauge your activity online and then show you a funny movie on your computer. You know, I mean, but it sounds silly now, but I actually think this stuff's coming. So that to me is the, you know, kind of maybe a couple years away. And the other thing that I think is really interesting, I believe we're only a week or two away from the next version of the iPhone. And I think, I'm just guessing, I have no data to support this, that Apple will suddenly start announcing products to collect the quantified self, just like we have from Nike and other companies. And so HR is suddenly going to have access to real-time data about people, what we're doing, where we are, you know, what meetings we're in, you know, why we came to work late, whatever it may be. And that information is not just being used for compliance or tracking, but more for what can we do to make the organization better? Because that's really the ultimate goal here. And so I think both those things, both the psychology and this new type of data, are really, really exciting. As I said, this is kind of new stuff. I come back in a year and we'll see what happened. But I think that's, to me, some of the more interesting things going on in the future.
Well, Josh, when I first became aware of you, you were really tracking the e-learning, learning, training space. You had kind of carved out a part of the world and said, I want to know this. It started probably with a curiosity that I really want to know this space. So as you fast forward, you know, 12 years, 15 years, How much of what your worldview was back then and is right now, how much is learning the center of everything in an organization, or is it more of a spoke in an organization?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, when I was, it's really, I'm a little bit embarrassed. When I started doing this stuff as an analyst, and I did learning, that's all I really knew, I thought HR was bunk. I didn't want anything to do with it. I literally believed, both Chris and I, that training was a performance support initiative, and it had nothing to do with HR, and it was all about training and education and performance support and building skills and all that stuff. And little did I know, you know, in 1998 or 1999, that there was this whole industry of how learning could be applied in all the other practices of HR. But I do believe it still stands alone, because in most organizations, if you talk to the CEOs, and I do have a chance to talk to CEOs more often now, a lot of times they will mention that one of their biggest challenges is their learning culture. And what they're really saying is that I need people in this organization to get up to speed faster on new things and help us change and adapt and innovate and deal with our customers in new and creative ways. And we can't, I mean, one of the large organizations I've spent a lot of time with, I won't mention who it is, a very, very successful big company, told me that they are at risk of having to lay off an enormous amount of their workforce because these people have not learned new skills. And that's not a problem of just throwing together a bunch of training courses and having an LMS in a corporate university. That's a systemic, you know, problem of how people spend their time and how motivated they are to learn and whether they are being given the time to learn. That topic comes up all the time. And, you know, in all the time that I've been doing learning technology, I still run into companies, you know, most of the time that are saying, you know, we kind of have things are kind of together, but they're kind of a mess. It's kind of hard to find things. You know, we have this LMS, but it's not quite doing what we want. We're not really doing the new digital stuff. We don't have enough video. We don't have enough social. It's hard. It's tricky. And in the 15 years I've been an analyst, it's changed enormously. And I'm telling you, it's like 3 years from now, something new is going to come up. And everybody's going to say, oh, well, we're not doing that. So I think learning is still a huge industry, and it is. I like to draw it as two circles that overlap. It's not the same as HR. People that are in the learning industry work in an HR function, but they do things that are not necessarily HR things. You know, they work on employee performance, and they put together, you know, support tools, and they do embedded learning, and they do assessment, and they do things that are very complementary to what the HR department does, but sometimes just very business-focused. So it's picked up, and in fact, there's a lot of new announcements coming. There's product announcements. You guys saw that one of the largest LMS companies was just acquired by one of the largest content companies. So the learning space is still, you know, very, very hot and rapidly changing.
All right. We are about to wrap up the show right now. George, thank you so much for joining with us and sharing your valuable insight with all of our audience. We really, really appreciate that. So where can our audience connect with you and get a hold of you?
I'm happy to take emails. I'll give you my regular email. It's jberson, J-B-E-R-S-I-N, at Deloitte.com. You can go to berson.com and register on our website, and you'll get a whole stream of stuff for free, and then you can become a member if you want. And I'm going to just about every trade show in the next 3 months with William. So if you want to meet face to face, let me know, and we'll try to meet face to face.
All right. So thanks, Josh. Thanks, William, and have a wonderful rest of the day.
Okay.
Thank you, Misha.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.